Hi, I'm Hillary Walsh, a serial entrepreneur, award-winning immigration lawyer, law professor, TEDx speaker, and raving Phoenix Suns fan. Over the past decade, I've helped thousands of immigrants live free in the United States. I'm talking work permits, social security numbers, green cards, their citizenship, VAWA, T visa, U visa, and lots of successful appeals. Here's the thing. Immigration law is super complicated, and legal advice, well, it can be pretty expensive. So I created the Immigration Law Made Easy podcast to share my 10 plus years of experience with you for free. So if you're looking for tried and true, no BS, step-by-step strategies and tips on how to win your immigration case and live truly free in the United States, you're in the right place, my friend. Let's get started.
Hi, my friends. Welcome to another episode of Immigration Law Made Easy. I'm your host. What's up? Let's jump into talking about N-400s, naturalization applications today, because this is the time. This is the time to go ahead and do it. If you qualify for it, you might as well go ahead and do it. Number one, you want to be able to vote in the next election, I hope. One way or the other, I hope that you vote. I think that's important. And this is your country, too. You've been here as a lawful permanent resident for a while. And a lot of folks, like this podcast in my mind, is for all the moms and dads who are not listening to this. Like, as I made this, like designed this episode and thought through it, my thought was, I'm thinking of my sister-in-law, Bridget, who she and I schemed together to help get her dad, my father-in-law, his citizenship, like many, many years ago. So I want to kind of start with, not only am I thinking of, you know, who is listening to this as the person who's the child, like you're a U.S. citizen, but your parent is a resident, and maybe they've been a resident for a long time, and we need to go ahead and push them over the edge and get them naturalized, but also, like, the person who this is kind of designed for is someone who's apprehensive about taking the test or just apprehensive about going through the process of going into immigration right now in a season where you're seeing some pretty scary stuff on the news. So let's start with my father-in-law. Ted Walsh is the single most wonderful human in the whole wide world. I kind of get like misty-eyed thinking about him because he's from Canada. And a lot of what they say about Canadians is true in the sense that they're just so dang nice. And he really is one of those people. He's so not judgmental. He is so kind, but he's lived a life. So I think that's where his lack of judgment for others comes from, is because he's lived a life and he's seen a lot. And he came to the United States from Canada when he was like, I don't know, I'm going to rough it up with the stories and the facts, but like he was young. He was either in his early 20s or his very late teens when he first came to the United States from Newfoundland, Canada. And he made a life here. And he also met and married Mrs. Walsh, the OG in my life, the OG Mrs. Walsh. When people call me Mrs. Walsh, I'm like, no, you don't know Mrs. Walsh. I'm just Hillary Walsh. But they got married, you know, 4,000 years ago, it seems like, because they've just always been together. And he was just a lawful permanent resident forever. And I went to law school, you know, became an immigration lawyer, and he was my first naturalization client. And he had been a very, very active, but obviously had never voted, but very active in U.S. politics for years. He knew more about politicians' records and kind of who was paying them and those sorts of things than anybody else who I've ever known. And yet he was a lawful permanent resident and so had to sit on the sideline and couldn't even vote. And so I was like, we've got to change this. I want to get you your citizenship. And the really funny story behind this is when I was in law school, I was an extern for a federal judge. And an externship is a fancy way of saying unpaid internship that you actually have to pay for so that you get college credit for it. So I went and worked for free for a federal judge. He didn't have to pay me. The court didn't have to pay me. I had to pay them for me to get to go hang out and learn from them. And I definitely think that I probably still owe them money because Judge Foley, you were awesome. I was probably not much of an extern. But what was so cool about that experience as an extern in a federal court was about once a month, my judge would preside over the naturalization ceremony, and he would get to swear all of these lawful permanent residents in for their citizenship. And at the time, I had not intended on being an immigration lawyer. My goal was to be a law professor. And I would get so verklempt. I mean, I would cry, let's be real, every single time they would play God Bless the USA. And they would show this kind of cheesy video of all the people who came to the United States and lots of beautiful imagery of the Statue of Liberty and all this other stuff. And every time I'm like sitting up there in my little suit and trying not to let everybody see that I was crying. But you look out over this sea of people in this courthouse and they're all so happy and they're holding their little American flag. And this is the final moment in their immigration journey where they had just taken the oath of allegiance. And they had just been sworn in by a judge, and now they were U.S. citizens. And I didn't appreciate then, and frankly, I'll never really be able to appreciate it because I've never gone through that journey myself. But I've sat on the sidelines and coached a lot of people all the way from getting sometimes out of the detention center all the way through to their citizenship. And it really is like a coach moment because you're just so proud. But watching those folks, this is the end of their immigration journey. They're now a U.S. citizen. And that is a really, really momentous moment that I wish that everyone could have who is an immigrant. I really wish that they could go all the way through the process and go ahead and get their citizenship. So if you're someone who has a family member who's probably been a resident, like my father-in-law had been for a long time, and they just kind of put it off, maybe they just didn't feel the need for it. Or on some level, like sometimes people don't want to become an American because they're still in their heart. And for him, it was, he's still Canadian. And the good thing is you don't have to give up your citizenship in your home country. You will always be your first country first. Like I haven't lived, this is the only way I can relate to this. I haven't lived in Kansas for 20 plus years. And yet I still am from Kansas. I will never not be from Kansas because that's where I grew up and that's where I'm from. And I think that's got to be the same for people who are from other countries where you might be an American after you go through the naturalization process on paper, but first you were this other countryman or woman first. And so you don't have to, you know, relinquish your home country citizenship or anything like that. You get to have both of your passports and those things. So you're Canadian American or you're Mexican American, or you can be a Mexican who's also an American. You don't have to hyphenate it. However you want to do it, you get to be both. So here's what I want to say is, in this day and age, it is so much better for you to go ahead and protect your status because we are seeing some really troubling patterns with people who are lawful permanent residents. They're wanting to travel and they're maybe getting some pushback at the border where they're questioned and taken to secondary in situations where we've never seen this before. And just in general, if you're here and you've been a resident for quite some time, or maybe you've just been a resident for 3-5 years, depending on how you got your green card. I really believe that if you want long-term security in the United States, now is the time to go ahead and apply for your citizenship. Because if you didn't know, it's not a fast process anyway. No immigration process is. So we might as well get you or your loved one, get their application in, because that's going to help them a ton. Now, it also helps prevent people once you naturalize. It helps protect you from deportation. Now, you might be thinking, look, my father, for me, like my father-in-law, he's not going to get into any trouble. Like the worst that he does is he likes to have a couple Miller Lights, Miller High Life, if I'm being specific, while operating heavy machinery in his backyard, like a skill saw or something like that, which just makes me nervous, but obviously is not a crime, you know? So I was never really worried that my father-in-law was going to get deported. But in the back of his mind, he had this secret fear that if he were to go in and apply for his citizenship, that they might tell him, actually, you never should have gotten your green card, or you've done something illegal, you have to leave. And that fear was I mean, he's a U.S. citizen now and had no problem at his naturalization interview. But that fear, you know, it can kind of live inside you and prevent you from taking steps forward. And what you don't want is to have this unsubstantiated fear prevent you from taking steps. And similarly, if you have ever had any history with, doing anything illegal, you definitely don't, I don't want you to do anything illegal, but if you're gonna do it, you should definitely do it after you're a citizen, all the way down to, let's just talk about using marijuana. Marijuana is something that the medical community is exploring more and more for you to be able to use marijuana, not only for actual medical, diagnosed illnesses, but it can also be something that people can use to help themselves cope better. I know folks who here in Arizona, it's legal to have marijuana and use marijuana, and people will use this specific substance to help them go to sleep or cope with anxiety, or it can help with lots of various things. But if you are doing that in a state where it's illegal and you have a certain amount of it, you can get into really big trouble, all the way down to you could get your green card taken away and you could get deported. We don't want any of that. And so long story short is it helps protect you from lots of things by having your citizenship. And then, of course, you can travel with a lot less stress. You can have your voting rights. And also what's cool is if you want, you can then sponsor a petition for another family member. And depending on what their age and what their relationship is, they might be an immediate relative and eligible to get their residency right away. So the last benefit is you can get some federal employment and other benefits that you're eligible for. That's also a benefit for U.S. citizens versus lawful permanent residents. So let's start with what are the things that we need to know? First of all, I want to headline this by saying your loved one has a clean criminal record, you don't have any criminal history whatsoever, and I'm talking like no arrests, no being detained, no being stopped, you know what I mean? No criminal history. And you don't travel a whole lot, like you're not out of the country for 2 or 3 months at a time, I think you should just do it yourself. I don't think that you need a lawyer to help you. The forms are very self-explanatory and it's a very short form. So it's easier than doing your own taxes. And they do their very best to make it where you can do your taxes really easily. So I don't say this. I said this even to one of my friends, one of my closest friends. I went to law school with him and his brother, and his wife is Korean. And she asked me hey, I want to do my naturalization. I asked her a couple questions do you have any criminal history? No. Are you leaving the country? Have you been leaving the country for a couple months at a time? No. It's look, just do it yourself. If you look at the forms and you get confused or whatever, give me a holler and I can help you out. But just do it yourself. And she did. She had no issues whatsoever. It's very, very straightforward. However, if you don't have a clean criminal record or you have been traveling a lot, you may want to talk to an attorney, and I'm happy to be that attorney to help guide you if that's something you want to do. So the first thing that you need to figure out when it's naturalization time is, am I eligible? So in most situations, you need to have been a lawful permanent resident for at least 5 years. So if you got your green card through your employer, it's going to be 5 years. If you got your green card through your kid, it's going to be 5 years. If you got your green card through the lottery and you were one lucky son of a gun, it's 5 years. The only time that you can apply for citizenship any sooner is usually when you're married to a U.S. citizen. And I think there might also be an exception for active duty military or something like that, but I don't know it off the top of my head. So we'll have to Google that later if that's the case. So 3 years or 5 years. Let's assume everybody who's listening right now, you've been a lawful permanent resident for more than 5 years, so you're eligible. You also have to have been in the U.S., physically in the U.S. for a certain amount of time. And it's usually for the half or more of the time that you are a lawful permanent resident from the time you apply. So 18 months if you're married to a U.S. citizen, or at least 30 months if you got your green card some other way. Basically, they want to make sure that you've actually been living in the United States. let me give you kind of background on this. One of the big points of emphasis is that when you naturalize, they want you to be American, like whatever that means. And if you're listening to this and not watching it on YouTube, when I say American, I'm like putting it in quotes, because what does it even mean to be American? I don't really know anymore. But nonetheless, they want you to be assimilated. That's like always been this really big emphasis for everyone. They want you to get here and act like an American, act like us. Again, I don't know exactly what that means, but that's the reason they want you to have been physically here. They want to make sure that you're a lawful permanent resident who is here. You're not just getting your green card and then going and living abroad, and then now you're also going to be a citizen abroad. They want you here, and they also want you to pay your taxes here, so that helps as well by making you live here instead of abroad. Now, if you are forced, like you're required to be overseas, there are exceptions to that. So like when I was a military spouse, I was on my husband's orders to be able to join him if I wanted to overseas. And so if you're someone in that situation where you've been living overseas because of like some type of job or something, or a study abroad program, and you're getting your degree overseas, there are exceptions to that. And that's not really what this podcast is about. Next up is you can't have been traveling outside the United States for more than like 6 or so months at a time. You really, really want to show, again, I'm going to emphasize this, that you've been here in the United States. You want to show that you have good moral character. They're going to do a look back on your criminal history, and there's basically a window of time where if you do have criminal history, they're going to consider it in deciding whether or not you're basically a good person, because they only want good people, good moral people, to be able to get their citizenship. One of the things that's really important to show that you have good moral character is you are up to date on your taxes. And if you're not, that you're on a payment plan and you're making payments, like you're current on your payment plan. And the same goes for child support. So if you've been, you know, you or whomever it is have been dodging your child support, you're not going to be able to get, you're not going to be able to get your citizenship. And in fact, just as a side note, I didn't realize that the IRS, if you stop paying your tax bill, the IRS can like freeze your passport and not allow you to travel. So that was kind of an amazing thing. So the IRS, they want their money. Okay, so let's talk about using the eligibility tool online. So there's a tool, Google USCIS N400. I have a Kansas accent, so in like naturalization 400 eligibility tool, and you can kind of fill in your information. It's like a little guided click through, and then it will help you determine if you're eligible, kind of from an initial glance of whether you're eligible or not to go ahead and apply. All right, next up, step two, you're eligible and now you're wanting to move forward. You're trying to decide, should I hire a lawyer or not? And again, if you have no criminal history, you're comfortable speaking in English and, you know, doing the full exam, and you don't have a whole lot of extended travel, you don't have any complex immigration history, those sorts of things, for real, just apply yourself. But please do it. The nice thing about hiring a lawyer is we will make sure it gets done. So if you need accountability, like my father-in-law, he absolutely could have filled out the forms himself. But he needed a little bit of like a push out of the proverbial airplane to go skydive over and do this naturalization. I was definitely that person for him. Like I helped coach him through it. And that included like, we're filing this today. It's done. You signed it. And we're going to file it now. Okay. Now, here's when I want you to get legal help, because I would be very hesitant. You don't want to go in and file for your naturalization and then, boom, realize that your arrest history or a past criminal conviction that you thought, oh, it's like I did my time, it was 20 years ago or whatever, or a past immigration issue where maybe you didn't disclose everything necessary. We don't want you to go in for your naturalization and then find yourself in removal proceedings, which people have done. And so that's why I say, if you feel like you've got a clean case, go for it. But if you have questions about whether it's a clean case, if you don't know what your arrest history is, for example, go to your FBI fingerprints. It's something that I had to do when I was getting sworn in as a lawyer. They want to see my prints and make sure that I have a clean history. That's a really easy way to do it. And there are all these different companies out there that will run your fingerprints for you. So if you're wondering, like, how do I know what's showing up on my arrest history? Like, I was stopped for a while. Was that an arrest? You can do your FBI fingerprints, and a lot of that sort of thing will show up. And then if you have questions about your immigration history, you can always do a Freedom of Information Act request for yourself. Those forms are also available online. And if you got questions about what happened at the border, you would do a FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act request, to CBP. You could do it to OBIM. I don't even know what that stands for, but O, B like boy, I, M like Mary, OBIM. They're going to give you a blast of where did you give your fingerprints to the federal government? And you'll be able to see kind of like who all has your prints. If you don't know what you said when you applied for your green card at the consulate, you can do a Department of State FOIA request. And if you don't know what you said to USCIS when you were here, if you did your adjustment of status here, you can do a USCIS request. You can do an ICE FOIA request. And last but not least, you can do an EOIR, which is the immigration court system. You can do a request to them too. So it's amazing what comes up for people, and very, very helpful to them. But again, if you're having to do this stuff because you want to make sure that you got a clean record, I really just recommend having a lawyer help you, whether it's me or someone else, because like if you have to do any of this extra work, you do not have a straightforward case. You're going to want to have someone who really knows what they're doing and knows what they're looking for do this. Okay. If you have complicated travel history, I had a client not long ago. I went down to Tucson and did his hearing, and he'd been out of the United States. He was a lawful permanent resident, and he had been out of the United States for like years and years and years. And then when he came back, he presented his green card, and he was put immediately into removal proceedings. I was then able to help him keep his green card. We showed that the reasons that he was out of the United States for that long were outside his control, and that he always had the intent to come back. But now he's eventually going to have to go do his naturalization. And I would say something like that. If you are on a budget, go for it without a lawyer. But we don't actually charge that much for N-400 stuff. So I would have a lawyer help you out, because that's going to be really stressful. And the filing fee is like real high for N-400s these days. So you don't want to like file and get denied just to have to turn around and file again, because that's basically almost the cost of the lawyer. And then if you need a disability waiver, that's also something where if you have a medical issue that prevents you from being able to take the test or something like that, you're definitely going to want a lawyer to be able to help you, because doctors are not super good at filling out that N-648 disability waiver. They don't ever fill it out right, and it's such a pain in the butt. So if those are your situations, I really think you should hire a lawyer. But if everything else is clean, you're good to go. So here we are at step three. I'm going to review. Step one, we figured out we're eligible. Step two, we're deciding, okay, I'm eligible. Should I hire a lawyer or not hire a lawyer? And then step three is let's figure out what's going to happen in the actual exam specific to your English, the necessary English speaking capabilities, and the civics test. So in case you didn't know, they will ask a couple of questions to the applicant, the person who's taking the exam and asking for their naturalization. They're going to ask some questions. And in my next podcast, I'm actually going to go through what an N-400 interview is like, so that, you know, if you're thinking about going for it, this will help prep you. So I will kind of go into more detail there. But there are actually exceptions, or I should call them exemptions, from the English requirement and in some cases the civics test as well. And let's go through what those are. First of all, if you get the medical disability waiver approved by USCIS, it will exempt you from either the English portion or the civics test, or in some cases, both. But I will say those are super hard to get approved, because USCIS is so picky about how they're filled out that I've never actually had one approved. And I've had some clients who were extremely deserving. And so I'm not a real big fan of those. Unfortunately, I just think that USCIS is out of control with how difficult they're adjudicating those. Okay, Now, there's something called the 50-20 rule, and that is, and this helps you be exempt from the English requirement. So I have a lot of clients who are Mexican. I represent a lot of Mexicans and a lot of Central Americans, a lot of Spanish speakers. And English is not their first language. And in some cases, they don't speak any English at all. They usually will understand a lot of English, but they will not be able to communicate back in English, which I can really relate with because that's kind of where I am on my journey with learning Spanish is I can understand generally what's going on, but I can't respond. Like, I don't know how to conjugate what I got to conjugate. So here's the 50-20 rule. And you don't have to take the test in English. You can take it in your preferred language. It is you're 50 years old at the time you file. And at the time you file for N-400, you've been a lawful permanent resident in the U.S. for at least 20 years. So that's why it's called the 50-20. You've been here, you're 50 years old, and you've been a lawful permanent resident for 20 or more years. And in that situation, you use an interpreter. It just wipes away the English component where you don't have to do any written English. The interpreter interprets everything for you. And you still have to take the civics test. They're just going to ask you the questions in your preferred language, Spanish, Hindi, whatever that may be. Okay? Next is the 55-15 rule, and it follows the same pattern. So if you're 55 years and older, and you have been a lawful permanent resident for at least 15 years, it's the same as the 50-20 rule, where you can take the test in Spanish, and you don't have to deal with, or your preferred language, I should say, you don't have to deal with the knowing and understanding and writing English, okay? So that's the 55-15 rule. And then we got one more. It's the 65-20 rule. And this actually is for, this makes it really much, much more simple for folks. So if you're 65 years old and you've been a lawful permanent resident for at least 20 years, you can get a simplified civics test and you can do the whole test in your preferred language with an interpreter. You don't have to do any of the English stuff, okay? So let me review those again because now that you kind of see the pattern, I think it'll be helpful. 55-20, 50 years old, 20 plus years as an LPR. 55-15, 55 years old, 15 plus years as an LPR, and 65-20, 65 years old, yes, 20 years as a lawful permanent resident. Okay, so I hope that, that kind of helps you with things. So at the end of the day, here's what I want you to do. Here's what I encourage you to do. I ask that you do. I would love for more voters to actually understand the immigrant journey. This is my ask, okay? This is my angle on today's podcast is I've been thinking a lot about, you know, I do a lot of TikTok videos and oh my gosh, people just don't understand immigration law. And they don't need to like know immigration law, but just the basic understanding. There's so few people who are out there who are voting Americans who actually understand how difficult it is to get your green card, how difficult it is to bring your kid here so they can get their green card, how even when you go through the whole process the right way or the legal way, and I'm putting air quotes around those things, how that process is so broken, the immigration system is so broken, and that hey, even if you break some of the rules along the way in immigration law, there are elements of forgiveness. They're called waivers. They're called waivers. That is el perdón. That's the forgiveness. So immigration law has baked into it a lot of ways to help people, but voters don't know that. And so when they hear this narrative about how all the illegals are coming here and taking jobs and using American resources like Social Security, you and I know that that's not true. And then that is simply a politician trying to get folks fired up. And people believe it. So I want more voters who actually, I don't care which way you vote, but at least be an informed voter. And I think that there's no more informed voter on most immigration issues than you, the immigrant, right? Like, I've never walked in those shoes, but you have, okay? So here's what I suggest that you do is go use the USCIS tool to see if you're eligible, and then create an online application portal, like go to the USCIS online portal, and it's going to give you step-by-step guidance on how to file it. It is super easy to fill the form out online. It's way easier than even filling it out through a PDF. I love the new online system. It will take your credit card payment. It will file it for you. You don't have to mail it. They will immediately give you a receipt notice, and they will mail you a receipt notice. The whole process is really straightforward and really great. Like, this is one of my big shout outs to USCIS. They really are trying to modernize things, and they've started with green card renewals and with N-400s, being able to do those online. And at the end of the day, if you really don't know what to do next, just give us a call and we can consult with you. That is, that would be my suggestion, is give us a call. Let us consult with you. Let us guide you. If you're calling on behalf of your dad or your mom or your grandparent, we really need the grandparent to call or the parent to call, the actual immigrant, because we have to ask them all these questions that only they're really going to know. But you can be their cheerleader and you can be their nudger who keeps moving them forward, and hopefully can be someone who's there with them when they play God Bless the USA at the naturalization ceremony. That's all for today, my friends. I hope you have a great one, and I'll talk to you soon.
My friend, I'm so glad you joined me today. If you have a friend or family member who may need some immigration law guidance or even just day-to-day encouragement, please send them a text or email or a DM on social media and say, "Hey, I think this podcast is going to help you." I sure wish someone had given me the tips I'm sharing here years and years ago when I was starting out as an immigration lawyer. Thank you so much for being here. I'll see you next week, same time, same place. Adios.